The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive.
Hello, and welcome to today's survival show. I'm Bob Main, I'm your host, and you are tuning in to episode number 68 of today's survival show, where it is my sincere goal to share common sense ideas with you to help you live a more productive and more secure life, and live life on your own terms, the way you want to, strengthening your resolve. This is a common sense, practical show. Not a lot of paranoia thinking, not a lot of tinfoil hat type of stuff. Just rooted in reality, accepting the fact that things can and will happen, and taking common sense approaches to preparing ourselves for those. And even today, we can thrive today so that we can survive tomorrow. So what we talk about on this show helps us now and later in the future. And with that, I am continuing on with part number 3 and the final episode on personal responsibility. And it's basically entitled, as you've noticed, Peaceful Revolution, One Person at a Time. I really believe that's what needs to happen in this world, is a peaceful revolution, one person at a time. This is the final part, and got a special show because I have another audio clip that I want you to listen to. And in this show, I'm going to talk about who are survivalists, where are survivalists, what is their makeup, and then I'm going to talk to you about some events that I want you to think about. Because if you're new to checking out the preparedness field, and I know that there's some people on our forum who are new because you've said so in your introduction, I want you to pay particularly close attention to this episode, because I'm going to do the best I can to try to get you thinking about not only why we prepare, but to let you know that by becoming prepared, you're choosing to join actually a group of a lot more common people than you think. When you hear the audio clip, I'm going to play the second half of the interview between Cody Lundeen and John Carney on KMOX Radio last September. And you know, the host is a good one. But again, he comes from that stereotype that survivalists are weird people, and we're not. So you've joined a group of common people, and like I said before, some people don't think they're survivalists, even when they really are. Okay, and I'm also going to paraphrase some more from Captain Dave's Survival Guide. Boy, I tell you, I love that website. And I'll put another link in today's show as well. Captain Dave's Survival Guide. It's excellent. All right, let's talk about geography first. Where are survivalists? Where do they usually hang out? You may see some in Florida. They deal with a lot of hurricanes. They're buying hurricane shelters. They're storing batteries, they're storing water, they're stocking up on plywood, they're getting ready for the next hurricane season. You may see some of them in California. They may be putting away food and supplies waiting for the next big earthquake to rock their place. You might see them in the Midwest, where I come from, up in Wisconsin. I'm a Yankee, folks. I live in the North Texas. I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, but I am a Yank. I was born in New York City, raised most of my life in Wisconsin. So you might see some survivalists up there with extra blankets packed away, extra boots, extra socks, a little bit of extra food, cold weather kits in their cars, especially this time of year. All right, you may see survivalists in the city. You might see a lot of them in urban settings, storing food and water, gas masks, things like that, because they might be worried about potential terrorist attacks hitting their cities. You might see survivalists that are fathers and mothers, fathers like me that have kids. We're worried about things like inflation. We're worried about unemployment if we lose our job. We're worried about supporting my family, because in my family right now, I'm the only one that makes an income in our family. I do a pretty good job at what I do, and so I make a healthy income, but we have to be prepared. If for some reason I should lose my job, even if it's no fault of my own, I need to be ready for that. You may see some survivalists in the form of single moms. Single moms that are doing a couple things. Some of them might be worried about their children, supporting their children, of course, and they'll be worried about the same thing as me, inflation and losing their job. But also, they tend to pay attention to things like, well, what happens if there's a flu outbreak and I've got to get my kids out of school or something like that. Single moms tend to be on fixed budgets, too. So a lot of them, even though they may not call themselves survivalists, trust me, they are. And the urban survivalists and the single moms, they're everywhere. So geographically, they're pretty much everywhere. You may see survivalists in Europe. I've got people from the Netherlands and from England that listen to this show. I've got people from Australia. I have people from Canada. They're all over. People who believe in preparedness are everywhere. So you have joined a group of people that exist all over the world. And that's what I feel good about, folks. What I feel good about is that this is being embraced all over, not just in one small geographical area. All right, now let me cover a little bit about the characteristics of some of them. Most people who believe in self-sufficiency or self-reliance, most of them don't necessarily hold a certain profile of in terms of being educated. Most of them just are the type of people that like to learn. You know, they love to learn. The level of education varies, anywhere from high school to college to somewhere in between, sometimes even you know, graduate students. It doesn't matter. The education spans the entire spectrum. A lot of survival-minded people are conservative, but they are from many different political avenues. And as I always say, all political opinions are welcome on today's Survival Show. We have people from all over the political spectrum, conservative, liberal, libertarian, somewhere in between. Many people who believe in preparedness are people of faith. And as I've mentioned before, all faiths are welcome on this show. It doesn't matter what you believe, but, you know, we find that the characteristics are most people are some type of person of faith. Almost all of them are family-oriented. Almost all people who believe in self-reliance are hands-on kind of people. They learn better by doing and by working with things. I also find that many of them have military or law enforcement experience. And the reason that a lot of them have military or law enforcement experience is I think when you're in the military and law enforcement, you begin to realize just how vulnerable society is. And a lot of survivalists are also gun owners. And if they weren't gun owners before, when they become survivalists, they do become gun owners because a lot of them realize how important their self-defense and also being able to put meat on the table if you need to. Now, survivalists don't typically skew towards one sex or another. Male and females seem to be, you know, even though it seems like there's more men that are on our forum, looking at Captain Dave's survival guide, most of the research that they did suggests that men and women alike are embracing the preparedness mindset. And all you got to do is go over to thesurvivalmom.com and you will check out her blog and you can see how many moms are into preparedness. And it's really good to see that. So I hope that gives you a little bit of an idea of where they are, who they are, and to let you know that if you're new to this, you're not joining a strange group of people. Now let me talk a little bit about why you should embrace preparedness and survivalism. Let's just kind of go back in history a little bit. Let's talk about some recent events. Let's talk about some things that have happened in the past. And when I finish up with this, let's see if maybe this gives you something to think about that you didn't think about before. Let me start with 9/11. That's pretty much what woke me up. I have to say I was raised a self-sufficient person and I fell away. Mainly through my college years and my early professional years, 9/11 woke me back up. And since then, we have seen that Al-Qaeda is seeking or developing nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons. Let's not forget about the terrorist attacks that have gone on, not just in the United States, but abroad. Our European allies have been hit. The London subway bombings, the Madrid train attacks, let's not forget those. The anthrax crisis, I mentioned that in episode 67. We invaded and occupied Afghanistan and Iraq, and we fought Al-Qaeda in the Middle East, and whether you agree with those wars or not, the fact of the matter is, it happened. And that's fostering problems around the world. Okay? We've been threatened by a nuclear-armed North Korea. We've seen an escalation in the conflict between India and Pakistan. Currently, Iran is not halting their nuclear development programs. Okay, let's talk about economics. Remember the dot-com bubble? I remember that. Big dot-com bubble, everybody made a lot of money in stocks, then the market burst, and then a huge recession followed that. Now we saw the same thing just recently, the housing bubble. Now it bursts. Look where we are now because of that. We're all paying more now for energy, gas, natural gas. We're seeing our dollar crumble. It's tumbling against the euro and other currencies. There's huge trade balances. Huge government debt. Okay, we've had terrorists that have blown up hotels. They've blown up nightclubs around the world. What about Katrina? We saw the failure of state, local, and federal hurricane response, mainly in Louisiana, Mississippi, parts of Alabama. Okay, and what I just mentioned are some man-made threats. You know, we have to understand something, that there's man-made threats and there's natural threats. And the man-made threats tend to be, in my opinion, those are the worst kind, because they're things that we could stop doing, but unfortunately, because of the human nature, we don't. Okay? What about the worst tsunami in history that we saw several years ago? What about the recent earthquakes in Haiti? What about tornadoes? What about hurricanes? What about pandemics? As our nation, as our world's population increases, so increases the number of diseases. What about obese people? Right? We're seeing a nation, and we're raising a generation, unfortunately, of obese, helpless people, and they're so spoiled, they can't lift a finger for themselves or do anything for themselves. They think they're owed everything. They have an entitled mentality. They think they're owed TVs. They're owed cars. They think that we owe them a living. They don't stay fit. They bring on more diseases, as Spencer Baker alluded to so eloquently in the interview that I recently did with him on functional fitness. Okay? Let's get back to some other global issues. What about the corrupt and ineffective UN? What about all the unchecked killing in Africa? What about the spread of all the HIV in the third world countries? What about the emergence of radical Islam? What about a fostering resentment out there of America in the developing world? And I'm sorry to say that, you know, because I am an American, but it is true. Let's not forget fact that there is a growing resentment toward us. And whether you believe that should be or not, the fact of the matter it is, as I like to say, I like to keep this show rooted in reality, it is what it is. And as I mentioned before, some of the threats that we face are natural. A lot of people are building homes closer to the sea. Approximately 40% of the United States lives within about 15 to 20 miles of coastline. And as people build homes in wilderness areas, they get threatened more by wildfires. And I'll conclude with some of the unintended consequences of our way of life. Rising oil prices because of our huge dependence on oil. Inflation, the obesity and laziness that I talked about before. And the sad truth is that there's a lot of disgruntled people outside of the United States that resent the fact that we have emerged as a superpower And they do. They resent our economic clout. They resent our lifestyle. They resent our size. They don't like our huge access to natural resources. They don't like our wealth or our politics. And they don't like the way our culture slowly overtakes theirs. And so we have that to deal with. And so if that isn't enough to get you thinking, I don't know what will. Now, a little bit more on who survivalists are, and then we'll jump into the next audio clip. A lot of them are individuals that have come to the inescapable conclusion, after everything I've just mentioned, that the world is, in fact, dangerous and unpredictable. And I don't mean to be negative. I like to be a positive person, and it's hard for me to even talk about some of this on this show. But again, it has to be based in reality. This is not paranoia thinking. Everything I've talked about is reality. Now, you have some people out there that like to engage in real far-fetched ideas. FEMA death camps and EMPs and solar flares and things like that. Stuff that is way out there. Asteroids hitting the Earth, all kinds of stuff. 2012 garbage and all that. That's the far-out thinking that hasn't happened yet, or at least hasn't affected us yet. And probably the odds of that, of those types of things happening, are far less than what I've just discussed and that what already has happened. And so people acknowledge that while they might not be able to eliminate these dangers, they can take steps to reduce the threat. And so they have decided to accept responsibility for keeping themselves and their family safe. They're prepared to feed and shelter and keep themselves relatively healthy under extreme circumstances without relying on outside sources. And finally, I want to say before I bring on the audio clip that some people have chosen to become survivalists because of something that's happened in their life, because of circumstance. Maybe they've had a close call of some kind. Maybe they witnessed something happening to somebody else. Maybe they had a child and they realized how vulnerable that little child is. And maybe they lived through some kind of a weather event that caused a long-term power outage, or maybe a bad ice storm. I've lived through a few of those. And they said, you know what, we're going to be better prepared next time that happens. Maybe they read something in the newspaper. Or they watched the news and they saw somebody else suffering. And they decided that they don't want to be a victim. Maybe they experienced a death in the family. Maybe they went through a family divorce. Maybe they lost a job. Maybe they're like some of the listeners to this show that have had personal experiences, and they've emailed me their personal experiences where they've had to engage in self-defense. And I read one of those experiences to you on one of my other shows. Okay? But regardless of what motivates somebody to engage in survivalism, the truth of the matter is the first time that they decide to start taking steps toward protecting themselves and their family, they're starting down the path of preparedness. And just because they don't go around saying, I am a survivalist, their actions typically lead towards some form of survivalism. So I wanted to set that up, and I wanted to cover these as a preface to the audio clip. Now let me go ahead and play the second half of that interview of Cody Lundeen. Now you got to remember something about this interview. He is on this radio station pretty much promoting his recent book. So I know that he gets kind of commercial in this. I know he talks about his book a lot. And I know he talks about his school that he's got going. And you know what? Hey, this is America. This is capitalism. So far, we still have some form of capitalism left, thank God, although there's people trying to assault that every day. But I urge you to look past look past the pushing of the book and listen to what the man is saying, because I think he's got some very valid valid points to talk about here. And even though he does get into some weird stuff like eating rats and disposing of dead bodies, you have to understand something. That's not too far-fetched to consider the fact that we could find ourselves in a position where we would have to do that. So I've got some comments, but I'm going to go ahead and play it for you now. Here's the second half of the interview with John Carney and Cody Lundeen from KMOX in St. Louis.
Cody Lundeen, his name, When All Hell Breaks Loose, Stuff You Need to Survive When Disaster Strikes, is his latest book. Also, the man behind the Aboriginal Living Skills School. And Cody, this a real school? Probably not with desks and textbooks, though, I would guess.
Yeah, it's with rocks and stumps and sticks. But yeah, it's a real school. But it's definitely outdoors. That's kind of the point with outdoor survival and even urban preparedness. But yeah, I've been doing that since 1991.
But do you worry because it is the kind of skill that a potential Unabomber would like to have too? Have you had some students and thought, well, what are you going to be doing with this information?
Not really. That's a great question, especially nowadays. But it's really, I get some really cool students, and I'm not saying that to blow smoke up their, you know what. It's just, I get a different genre of people. You know, we are not doing Tai Bo out in the field. You know, we're doing some gritty stuff. And they either want to have a challenge, or now since the recession's kind of, you know, still having its way with the country, a lot of them, unfortunately, are fearful. You know, they want to know how to do more with less for very, very practical reasons in their mind's eye. So when the economy was good, I had the adventure crowd, and I still do, and they have a blast out in the field, you know, doing whatever we're doing, you know, catching fish with our hands, making fire with sticks, etc. And now I have kind of the more crowd that unfortunately has an impending doom situation and just wants to know how to do more with less.
Let's talk about what goes on in this class besides noodling, right? Isn't that what it's called?
When you exactly, yeah.
Catch a fish with your hand? Not bad for an Irish Catholic Jew from the city, I might
that
say.
Is good. Yeah.
And then the starting fire with a stick, which I think really only happens in Hollywood.
No, it can happen outside of Hollywood. And frankly, it probably doesn't really happen in Hollywood. They have probably a little smoke machine behind
exactly.
The fire hearth, you know. So what I do, John, is I teach modern outdoor survival skills. So John and his sweetie are out in the mountains in their Jeep, and the Jeep breaks down, and there's a winter storm rolling in. What do? That usually involves a third-party rescue via SAR, which is an acronym for search and rescue. I do primitive living skills, which I reference because it's more radio-friendly, about, okay, what did the Indians do here several hundred years ago? Well, they had to live off the land and blah, 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 and we're making everything from scratch on up into urban preparedness, which was when All Hell Break Loose, the book, was about. So as far as, like, my Ultimate Abo course, which is my last course for the season, coming up late September, October, it's 6 days at a primitive base camp way out in the middle of nowhere, and we're making cool stuff from scratch, usually on site. Firewood sticks, cattail sleeping mats, willow backpacks, deadfall traps and snares, stone knives, gourd canteens. So picture a backpacker, 10,000 BC. And that's what we're going for. In the last 3 days, we live off the land, for better or for worse, with primitive gear, with the tribe of clients and myself. I'm not like sitting up in the suburban, you know, smoking a cigarette. I'm there losing weight with everyone else. And we try this stuff out for real.
Now, what about the person that runs into Armageddon from their cushy little loft in the hood? You know, not a lot of gourds to find out on the highway to build your canteen or moose to bag at the Galleria.
Yeah. Well, the beautiful thing about an urban situation is Americana slaboleus. That's Latin for a typical slob in America. There is garbage up the ing. I'm pouring myself water on break time from an old 2-liter Pepsi bottle, which, by the way, the clear ones, or Coke, don't mean to, you know, plug Pepsi too much. You can use UV radiation from the sun to disinfect the water, about 6 hours, depending on your latitude. So I can take garbage and use it to disinfect my water and have a snazzy water container that if you fill one of those sometime, go out with whatever in the parking lot, fill an old 2-liter pop bottle, then throw it against a brick wall. Not as hard as you can, but pretty hard, and chances are it will rebound and be just groovy.
Huh. Also, the week after Ratatouille, I want to ask you about. There's it's a recipe on eating rats, and it goes into great detail about skinning and the cooking and what happens to the carcass in that process. which leads me to believe that from the great amount of information here, you've done this on a number of occasions.
I have. John, have you ever eaten duck?
Sure.
Rats a lot like duck, but with a nutty flavor.
But there's probably not much to eat.
You'd be surprised. I'm talking pack rats. I'm not talking about the big Norway ones that are chewing off a baby's head right now in Manhattan. It's the typical pack rat. There is quite a bit of meat on them, definitely. I think one rat is worth equivalent to at least 5 or 6 mice. And the meat is a darker texture. To quantify it for you, it's kind of a rich, dense, dark meat like duck, a little bit oily. And I actually prefer it to rabbit, to desert cottontail or jackrabbit. It's very tasty stuff. And yeah, you're right. It's not like a drumstick sitting on the table there as far as quantity of meat.
Now, is this something that you will actually eat even when you don't have to?
Sure. I've eaten rats and mice when I don't have to. Why waste free protein? You know, and I have tons of them at my place because I live out in the middle of nowhere. And they're destructive little critters. So what better way to kill what's ailing you and then eat it? You know, it's like the ultimate coup to get that rat power, you know, so that you can be as, you know.
I'm not really feeling that, Cody.
Okay, well, and it would just try to visualize, you know. It's like, sometimes it's a psychological incentive as well to go in and just rip a piece of that meat off.
And, you know, it's one of these things that, you know, I approach now tongue in cheek. But left with no food and no choices and needing to feed the family, and a rat is something I see after 4 days with no food, I'm going to think, boy, I should have torn that page out of Cody's book and carried it with me, because I would indeed do whatever I had to do to keep my family alive.
You would.
And the scenarios can be grim. You offer up advice in the book on how to dispose of a body. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So how did this one come to you? Why did this one come to you? And how do you practice?
Exactly. Well, I practice. I have a permit, scientific collection permit from Game and Fish. So I'm loaded. I'm a lethal weapon as far as picking up roadkill. I have an actual permit to catch fish with my hands, to pick up roadkill, to kill things in the field in bizarre ways, including blowguns and all this other bizarre stuff. They actually have a permit for this in Arizona and probably other states. But back to the body thing. Think about Hurricane Katrina. You got 2,200 corpses floating around the street. You know, the emergency response system is obviously overloaded / incompetent in that one as far as the command down presence. We all know that story. And what was horrifying to me, John, is, okay, a disaster strikes, people are going to die. Period. If it's a big one, someone's going to get it. That's just the way it is. That's common sense. And I researched and researched and researched to find how to deal with a corpse. You know, and the CDC didn't have it. Center for Disease Control. The World Health Organization didn't have it. FEMA didn't have it. I had to go to this obscure medical website from some hospital and talk to a coroner in town about the realities of dealing with a human body. And by the way, if your listeners do that, it's not recommended, because there's an arsenal of paperwork that will hit them in the face for even moving a corpse. You better well document everything, document it out the yin. But it's a buzzkill to see Uncle Fred bloated up like the size of a cow in your front yard.
Oh, he had it coming.
Yeah. So, and survival is 90% psychology. And those two, you know, you don't want the kiddies seeing Uncle Fred in the front yard. And if emergency response is overloaded, which practically they will be, you might have to deal with the body. And what was frightening is none of these responses, FEMA, none of them had any information, and probably to this day still don't, because of what? Liability? You know, they barely get into how to deal with your poop.
All right, now you've piqued my interest. So what do you do with Uncle Fred?
Uncle Fred, okay. If you have to, the body putrefies in a couple different ways. One is temperature related, and that's a variable that can be accounted for. And the other is certain bacteria in the gut. So in other words, you could have Uncle Fred and Aunt Mabel dead as a doornail right next to each other from the same impact or whatever. And Mabel can look like a putrefied mess in a few hours, and Uncle Fred looks like he's just sleeping. So the wild card is the intestinal fauna and flora in the gut that cause excess putrefaction. So what I would want to do, if you know that you have to deal with the body, is deal with it as soon as possible. And like I mentioned in the book, wrap it in plastic, bury it if you can. Any sort of identification goes in Ziploc bags. You want to, you know, take photos, write everything down, because when it blows over, when the disaster starts to get back to normal and things normalize, you will be responsible for moving that body. And that's kind of what scares me more than Katrina is the legal system in this country. Basically, you want to wrap it up, John, and I want people to know that unless the dead body died of a disease that's spreadable, like cholera, it's not going to Uncle Mabel or Uncle Fred or whatever in the front yard that died of an impact from the porch coming down from an earthquake is not going to spread disease, because they didn't die of a disease. Now, the anus will leak feces after a while, which can spread some nasty stuff to water and whatever. You got a great visual for your people eating.
Yeah, thinking about what's for dinner.
Yeah, so wrap it up. That's why I love plastic. 6 mil would be the thing with that. Plastic and duct tape, you know, so you don't use pins or anything that would perf that plastic, and temporarily dispose of the corpse. And if you can't even bury it, you could just wrap it in plastic and at least contain the mass.
And Cody Lundeen is with us as we head into our three-day weekend, everybody. Enjoy yourself. quick break. We'll come back with more. The latest offering from him, When All Hell Breaks Loose, stuff you need to survive when disaster strikes. Let's hope it remains a work of fiction, but you just don't know. And nothing better to arm yourself with than information. More to come on KMOX.
Now, back to more The Carney Show with John Carney on KMOX. Or, in his case, would that be less?
All right, welcome back. A little over an hour from now, Ralph Grazak hits the airwaves with Your Turn. We have games coming up next hour, a chance for you to win some grand things. Cody Lundeen with us this hour. His latest book, When All Hell Breaks Loose, stuff you need to survive when disaster strikes. And it is just that. The book before that, bestseller, 98.6 Degrees, The Art of Keeping Your Ass Alive. And two books now, and I know situations will change, Cody, but with these two books, does it cover most stuff, or have you just scratched the surface?
That's a great question, and I'm so glad you asked. 98.6 Degrees is all about thermoregulation, hypo and hyperthermia, which is the most common way that an outdoor recreationist dies. They let the cookies in their torso get too hot or too cold. And I lumped in a survival kit for desert mountain regions. That's a 215-odd-page book, and that's all it deals with, and that's one specific thing. So when all hell breaks loose, John, I got paid for a 200-page book. It's 450 pages long, because when I got into it, I realized, damn, they're going to need to know this. I just bit off more than I could chew, and I was breach of contract over my deadline three different times. And literally the last 5 months, about 11-hour days, 6 days a week, I thought I had a girlfriend, where is she now, type writing. I hated it. I mean, it was just grueling. So to answer your question, no book out there is comprehensive, because the things with the two greatest amount of variables on planet Earth are human nature under stress. When people get scared, weird stuff happens, and Mother Nature. And you cannot possibly have a 3,000-page book to cover all the variables. And I've gotten hit on by morons, you know, on Amazon. This book doesn't cover this or this. You know, I say right up front, look, idiot. You know, you can have an entire novella about each chapter in my book. Communications has and could be a 500-page book in itself.
Well, another variable, too, that needs to be considered here is, well, for most of Mother Nature's cards, we know what she can deal. I mean, shy of an asteroid hitting us and careening us off our axis, and a book isn't going to do you a damn bit of good.
Yeah.
As far as man-made disasters, i.e. terrorist attacks, that technology and that type of threat constantly changes.
Yeah.
So there's no way to prepare for things that we don't even know exist as a threat at this point.
Right, and even, and I agree with you that we know a lot of the variables about storms, but I have two other books that are not pending. I haven't signed a contract, but I've started writing two other books, and one's on natural disasters, and I was researching tornadoes. Scary stuff.
Oh, I'm sure.
They have every state in the union. They have come at night. They're supposed to come between this and this hour of the day, but they do whatever the hell they want to do, you know. So, and that's how Mother Nature works.
How do you keep from becoming paranoid when your life and your work is thinking about what if? How do you relax?
That's another great question. I love what I do. So, like, you seem natural on the radio. You're the man. You know, you've got it down. It's what you do. It's who you are. So to me, these quote-unquote scary stuff to other people, it's fun. It's fun being self-reliant. On my homestead, we're pushing the envelope. We're going to start raising rabbits and chickens and maybe even aquaculture. I mean, got to raise fish in the desert. Every hippie wants to do that. The house heats and cools itself. So it's a real blast for us to try to reduce variables and parasitic utility bills and whatever just by cool common sense stuff that every Indian knew. Why is the Indian ruin on the south side of the cave? Well, because we were tired of the babies dying.
Hey, Cody, we are out of time, but so much stuff that I wanted to get to and we haven't. Please come back and join us again on the program, and we'll have a lot to talk about, I'm sure, next time our paths do cross. Cody Lundeen, When All Hell Breaks Loose, on shelves everywhere.
Okay, folks, I'm back, and as I've mentioned before, even if you don't agree with everything Cody says, don't you love the guy's personality? I got to give him credit for that. Do you have your fried rat recipe ready yet, or are you ready to sign up for his school? I enjoyed that part. Make sure you got your bags now so you can dispose of bodies. Anyway, hey, something I forgot to mention in the beginning of the show. If you notice some background noise throughout this podcast, I'm doing the car thing again. I'm in my vehicle. I put on about 45,000 miles a year on the highway, folks. And as I'm driving down the road, eating my fried pork skins and drinking a bottle of water, yeah, I do the junk food thing sometimes. I'm a survivalist, but I do the junk food thing. Can't help it. I'm still managing to keep my weight off, and sorry, I won't eat the pork skins while I'm trying to talk to you. But anyway, that's why you hear that going. So I like to take advantage of some windshield time, and you heard my phone ring before. I'm kind of juggling three different things, doing driving, taking business calls, and talking to you and bringing you some hopefully valuable information. And so I want to bring this episode and bring to a close the third part of Peaceful Revolution, one person at a time. Collectively take everything I've talked about in the last three episodes and just sit and think about it. And I hope that in some way, shape, or form, I have motivated you to take a step or some additional steps to living a more secure life, to harnessing the power of choice, to basically tap into the God-given rights that you're given, to live life the way you want to. The life, the liberty, and the pursuit of happiness that everybody is entitled. And don't let anybody take it away from you. Please, please, even if this one simple thing that you do, go out and do it. And thanks for tuning in. Remember, folks, this show is not filled with tons and tons of sponsors and commercial activity, and I like to keep it that way. If this show has benefited from you and you'd like to support it, there's a donate button on the front page, and that's all I'm going to say. For now, this is Bob Main. I'm your host. Thanks for listening to episode number 68 of today's Survival Show, and I'll close with a quote from Teddy Roosevelt, as I always say, do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.
A country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Our own way.
whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't